It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
Welcome into today's Skinny Podcast here on Local12.com, and we're going to start a college basketball one a couple days a week with a couple of guys that know a lot about the UC Bearcats and the Xavier Musketeers. Chad Brendel from BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from Musketeer Report. Fellas, welcome aboard. Before we get into any basketball whatsoever, we have to touch on this right off the bat for Chad. We have to get into the Tommy Tuberville stuff. I know this is a basketball podcast.
Nice.
And we will get into some basketball stuff. I promise we're going to preview the seasons for both Xavier and UC today. Friday we'll preview the opening games for both. And then moving forward, Mondays and Fridays we'll kind of look back at the weekend and look ahead at the coming weekend. You may hear some other voices on the show when I'm traveling or these guys are not able to do it. But for the most part, it'll be the three amigos trying to knock this out each and every week. But
it's the inaugural Skinny College Basketball Podcast. Podcast brought to you by Tommy Tuberville and UC's football program.
Exactly right. It's a great way to start it.
A little locker room talk.
It was. This is like he threw us a softball.
Hey, you can both go to hell.
Get a job. Honestly, how are you here at 10 a.m. right now?
Get a job. In the context of saying get a job to somebody, that's very benign.
Yeah.
But the rest of that, the go to hell part, and layered into what he said on Tuesday that he didn't think this was going to be a very good team, layered into him taking the fans a task. This was a big deal, Chad, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I was standing right there as it happened, and it was one of those, oh boy, I'm going to have to deal with this for quite a few days. You can't lose your temper like that. The thing is, that guy has been at every game, and he heckles him coming off the field every time, and I think Tommy just finally had reached his boiling point and told him to go to hell. So,
first of all, it's a wild way to come at somebody just saying, you're stealing from the university, Tommy. That was weird.
It's a great line, though.
It
got a response.
And
that's what you were looking for.
And Tommy jumping straight to get a job in the middle of a football game of a fan who's paid to be at a stadium. And obviously not that far away from the
No, he's in the first
field.
Row of the right above the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, I'm figuring he paid for those seats. So you would think he's making at least like 40K a year.
If he's there every game.
Yeah.
Well, apparently he came out in the Enquirer in one of the comment sections, and somebody claimed it was them. And
he said he did have a job.
He says he's a lawyer in Illinois.
Nice,
wow.
That's a job.
That is a job.
That qualifies as a career, even.
Now, on that, Doug Pelfrey told me a story last night. I guess back when Boomer was back in town the second time through, holding a clipboard. I guess there was a guy that heckled him every game about not playing. You're washed up. You're over the hill. And Boomer turned to him apparently and said, "Listen, I don't yell at you when you come get my garbage every Monday." That's a good one. That's a good one to put a guy in his place.
Right.
I wish Tommy would have just waited until he got back in and done the whole LeBron thing. Look, you on Monday you all will go back to your crappy lives, and I'll still be making $2.1 million because you can't buy me out yet.
Well,
suck it.
They're closing in. I do want to touch on that part of it. That's a good segue, actually, because
here to talk basketball.
We are. We have to touch on this. We really do because it is.
I don't want to.
I know you don't. But
how can you not enjoy this though? What else is going on in UC football to talk about?
True.
At least gave you a week of content.
It did. Exactly. Because the fans are up in arms and rightfully so. This is not going to end well this season. This is not going to end in a bowl season. I mean, they're going to have to. I can't find two more wins. I can't find another win, to be quite frank, but maybe they eke one out. I don't think they'll be favored in any of the last three games they play.
10.5-point dogs at Central Florida.
And then they've got Memphis at home and Tulsa, right?
And Tulsa's really good.
Tulsa is really good. So not going to be favored in any of the last three. So chances are they're not going to a bowl. How does this end for Tommy Tuberville and the university?
I would have thought maybe a week ago that due to monetary issues that it probably would have ended in another season. I'm thinking that's less and less likely as each passing day goes by.
Yeah, where would the buyout stand if they wait till after this season as opposed to waiting another year?
Well, if they wait, right now it's $2.4 million.
As it stands today.
If they wait until December 7th, it drops to $1.5.
Which is doable.
If they wait until December 7th of the following year,
which
it drops.
Which is another full season of football.
It drops to one.
But like we were talking about last night, that's how many weeks after the last game for you?
December 7th is 2 weeks after the
last game.
Going
to be an awkward 2 weeks in Clifton.
It is. I mean, it really is. Weeks.
You're not catching $900,000 on fire.
Yeah, right.
No. Not in the situation they're in.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right. In your opinion, come December 8th, is he still the football coach?
I think it's less and less likely as each passing day goes by, but I do find it interesting that Mike Bone kind of gave him a pick me up in his little statement yesterday.
That's never a good thing.
That wasn't.
I know.
We're keeping our football coach. That was, he did something really stupid, and I still have his back. That's a different vote of confidence.
But it's a weird situation there because when you look at how he worded it, it wasn't that strong of support. And at the same time, if you're Bone, you cannot become known as the AD who just threw his coach under the bus at the first. So, I mean, look, it's a bad look for Tuberville, and he put Bone in a really tough spot. But Bone still can't just throw him under the bus. That'd be a really bad look. So you got to support him a certain extent if you're going to keep him through the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, because you got another 3 weeks to deal with this. Five, technically, if you go all the way to the buyout.
And you've already got a dumpster fire to sell to the next head coach you're trying to hire.
Because no Big 12. I mean, honestly, the program has gone downhill from a wins perspective each of the years he's been here.
And you don't want to be trying to sell them, oh, yeah, and I'm the guy who, as soon as you do something wrong, I'm going to throw you under the bus in the media.
Legit point. So it will be, at the end of the day, guess what? Tommy's the one that's going to need to get a job, correct?
Potentially.
It's called get retirement, Social Security, and play golf.
So now you can play golf 7 days a week as opposed to five.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that correct?
There you go.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We'll transfer into basketball. And from time to time, we'll be talking some Kentucky basketball. Jeff Drummond will join us from time to time. Todd Jones from the Columbus Dispatch will join us to talk some Ohio State. And before we get to Xavier and to UC, because Rick and Chad are here, and that's the focal point of the show, I do have to touch on the 156 that Kentucky hung on Little Lasbury last night.
Why are they playing a Division II NAIA team?
That is legitimate. And for those who don't know, they're wondering, where is Asbury? It's in Wilmore, Kentucky, which isn't very far from Lexington. So I think it's just a payday for them. And it might pay for everything for a long time for Asbury's athletic program. But holy cow, what do you get out of that?
Last night was the best example. You know, people always talk about how crazed people in the state of Kentucky are about college basketball, how much they love it. Last night was the best example I've ever seen of that. And it's not because what the announcers were saying, that UK fans were still cheering when they were dunking with 156 points. It's because of the simple fact that Asbury kids, these little kids from Kentucky, love Kentucky basketball so much that they were dying to get on posters.
Yeah.
Jumping into dunks so they could get posterized even with a minute left in the game down by 100.
That's the wild thing I've ever seen. For any of those kids, that's going to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now.
They're going to ask Derek Willis to autograph their posters.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The kid that Mulder dunked on at the end. Like,
got his autograph.
He ran into it.
Yeah, he asked for it.
He purposely was like, please dunk on me, sir.
I don't think suicide jokes are funny, but that was the basketball version of taking your own life.
It really was. I mean, it was crazy, the whole circumstance. Running up the score or not running up the score, you have no choice in that circumstance.
I love that Cal was just like, no, go score 100 in the first half. We only got to 88. Good try. We'll get it this half. I love that mentality.
What? Bam played 8 minutes in the first half. Like, he didn't. They could have won by 200 if he'd have played Fox and Monk and Bam and those guys.
Their minutes, two of the walk-ons played 7 minutes, and that was the least amount. The most amount that anybody played was 19 minutes last night. And so
I like that. I think Asbury's coach, right when they went to shake hands, Cal said something about, you know, like, hey, sorry it got out of hand, or sorry we're dunking with 40 seconds left on fast break and posterizing your guys. And Asbury's coach right away was like, hey, we couldn't stop. Like, you could tell he was just like, I'm sorry we sucked, you know, like, sorry we couldn't keep it to under 80.
They also jacked up 49 threes, Asbury.
But they
did make eight. Good for them.
Also like that they said that's their style. They're going to play run and gun, and we stuck with it tonight. I said, you sure as hell did.
Okay. You played your style, and it got you 63. You know what you can say? We scored 63 on Kentucky, because there's going to be some teams this year that can say they didn't score 63 on Kentucky. Asbury did.
Some that aren't going to come close.
Correct.
They better make those new scoreboards with triple digits. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, all three, I think the blue-white game, first exhibition game, this game, I think this team is going to score a little bit more than the last team scored, because they had a hard time doing that at times. Let's move on to Xavier and to UC. We'll start first with you, Chad, and the Bearcats played Bellarmine this week in the exhibition game after they played the secret exhibition game.
Super secret scrimmage.
They played that at where Bankers Life Fieldhouse against
Indiana State.
That's not the most secretive place to play it.
No, not really.
That's a good point.
There was information readily available game at Bankers Life.
Can't keep people out of there.
That's actually a good point. Just keep wandering right through. Why not? People probably saw it. People probably wonder what in the world's going on down there. Yeah. Who are they?
Who's playing down there?
Who is that playing down there?
The Pacers suck.
they look awful small. What are they doing? But the other night against Bellarmine, no Jacob Evans, and it certainly made a difference. I mean, they didn't play well. Mick took them to task a little bit, and it probably served every purpose he wanted it to serve, because it gave him a teaching moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, Troy Copain played off the ball at the three. I know there's been a lot of people in the UC fan base that have said for years that Troy needs to play off the ball, and I've always countered with he's never played off the ball in his life, so I don't know why everybody thinks that's a great decision, because he's not comfortable playing without the ball in his hands.
There are people that think that's easy to just make that transition, that you're just going to go play off the ball and be a scorer and a shooter, and some guys are. Some guys are way better off the dribble and off the bounce than they are coming off screens and catching and shooting and trying to score. It's a different way to play.
And it's like, because he's this bigger, thicker physical guard, everyone's always said he's not a true point guard. It's like, well, that may not be your version of a point guard, but he's always been a point guard. He's always had the ball in his hands.
Well, it goes, I mean, Isaiah Thomas in the days when he played either at Indiana or the NBA was technically a point guard, but he was a lead guard because he could score.
Right.
And then because he could score, he could set other people up. So that, you know, you can do both of those things, and it's probably more of a comfort level. Now, obviously, Mick has other guys that have more true point guard skills. Is that the main reason for this, or is this more because Jacob Evans didn't play the other night?
Well, I mean, if Jacob Evans would have played, Troy would have started at the point guard spot. The difference is when you put Justin Jennifer in, Justin Jennifer can't play another position.
Right.
So he has to play point guard. So that moves Troy off the ball. He's not going to play the two because he's not a natural, you know, scoring guard. So you're better off putting him at the three. You know, he just wasn't comfortable. It never really looked like he found any aggressiveness. But on the flip side, I thought it got Justin Jennifer some minutes, and they're very much going to need him with as thin as they are on the perimeter this year.
Yeah, I mean, he actually played pretty well. I mean, what happens if he starts to play well and you have to find a way to get him some minutes?
I mean, then you play more of, you know, you could probably play a situation where you have Justin, Troy, and Jacob Evans, all three on the floor at the same time, and you got three point guards, basically.
Yeah. How surprised are you by what you've seen from Jennifer so far? Because we've talked about him a lot since he committed, and also, do you feel like this is legit so far, what we've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think he had a really good summer. I thought he was the most improved guy on the roster over the summer, just from the standpoint of he wasn't doing the things that made me dislike him. In terms of forcing the action, forcing shots, throwing, you know, passes that worked in the Baltimore playground when you're 10 years old. But
I mean, he's always been that way.
Yeah, like, but he's reined it back in. And the thing that, you know, he has a good handle. He has really good vision. I mean, we've seen him make some plays that, you know, over the years that are spectacular.
But sometimes make the easy play, not the
right.
Play.
Well, he's making the easy play a lot more efficiently now. He's not turning it over as much, which is the big thing.
Shooting the ball well too.
Yeah, he had a, you know, he was one of those guys that, because I think he was smaller, he had that hitch in his shot where he uses his off thumb to like flick the ball. When he first came in, so it was a knuckleball and didn't have any rotation on it. Now he's starting to get some rotation. The shot looks a lot better.
Yeah, two of three threes the other night.
Yeah, it's still a little bit funky, but it looks a lot better coming out of his hand, and it's got some natural arc and rotation on it that you want to see. So, yeah, I mean, he had a really good offseason, so I was hoping it would translate. And so far, I mean, he played really well in the Super Secret scrimmage. And then played well against
Bellarmine. How do you know if he played well if it was a super secret scrimmage?
Sources say Skinner.
Gotcha. It was at Bankers Life Fieldhouse.
What if the sources were, that's right.
That's a good call, yeah.
There were two shoppers.
You were one of the wanderers.
I did not go to Indianapolis for that, no.
Not for the super secret. Jerron Cumberland, I know people interested in seeing him play. Seeing him in high school, I didn't think he's a great three-point shooter. He got up five the other night, was 1 for 5. He looks like a fullback or a linebacker or a tight end. I mean, he is strong as can be.
I think they're playing him at H-back this year.
Exactly. Yeah. He'll be the lead blocker for all the point guards. Just take him all the way to the rim.
You know, it's funny. I've long had concerns about his shooting because his shot is
– it's funky.
Bad. I mean, it's goofy. It's. I don't know if you haven't seen it. He shoots completely off the left side of his face.
Almost winds up.
Yeah. I mean, he shoots it from all the way over here. For those watching at home,
The visual was his right hand was on his left cheek. So there you go. Now I'm trying to get to the visual for it.
So this is an
audio medium, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, I remembered that as I was making that point.
Yep.
We'll edit that part out.
Edit that out. You know, it's not pretty, but he's shot the hell out of it all summer. So. But he didn't shoot well, and he's coming back from an ankle injury. He missed the red-black scrimmage with an ankle injury. He didn't shoot well in the scrimmage, and then he was 1 for 5 in the
I don't think
exhibition.
He's a shooter. I think he's got a chance to be a good scorer. I just don't think he's a shooter.
He needs to be able to shoot the ball.
Here's the thing about that, though. You guys are both way lower on his shooting than I am, because the one thing we've always known about him is it's, his shot is ugly.
But it goes in.
And he's going to miss a lot, but at the same time, once he gets going – he'll hit 6 of them in a game. Like, I mean, that dude, when he gets it going, he gets hot.
I did a high school game on the Wilmington and Moeller last year on TV, and he made, I think, his first 4 threes and then proceeded to miss his next 10.
So I mean, that's him. He's weird. Very streaky, but we've seen him in
and
AAU.
Unfortunately, fell in love with it that night, and it really cost him.
Yeah, both Xavier and UC recruited him throughout the process. We watched him a lot in AAU, and he's a guy who one game he's 0 for 6, the next game he's 6 of 10. Yep. You know, I mean, that's just how it goes for him.
Yeah, you mentioned how much do they need him to get give them 9 to 12 off the bench?
A lot. Yeah. I mean, he's really the guy at, you know, you've got Kevin Johnson and Jacob Evans at the 2 and 3, and Cumberland is kind of the backup for both. So, I mean, he's going to have to play 15 to 20 minutes a game, and I don't know that he's going to get up around 10 points, but they need him to be at 7 or 8 probably.
How's he looking defensively?
Like Jaron Cumberland.
That's...
Yeah. I mean,
what are they doing? Are they hiding him? Are they playing a lot of man with him in the game?
Or? They played a lot of man against
Bellarmine. He plays on the offensive end, and they put a guy on the defensive. It's kind of like the old school Iowa 3-on-3 basketball.
Yeah. they played man against Bellarmine, but, I mean, they're going to play the 25, the matchup zone. Okay. I mean, so he's going to be on the bottom of the zone. They played a little bit of it. He had a couple steals. I mean, the thing is he's got
– smart.
He's got a good basketball IQ. He's got good instincts. He just doesn't have natural lateral quickness.
Yeah, he maneuvers like a tank.
Yes,
like
because he's a tank.
Built.
Right.
Yeah. If people haven't seen him, I mean, he is a physical specimen. He really, truly is. I mean,
great. I was over the summer during in June, they do the football camps every day. And I come up the steps to work one of the football camps, and the defensive ends or the defensive line coach is standing at the top of the steps talking to Jaron, and
probably begging.
Yeah, Jaron walked away, and I was like, trying to get him to come out.
Son, who are you? What are you here for? Mm-hmm. You're a basketball? Come on now.
You're a guard?
Yeah, you're a guard. Come
on. What the hell?
As I mentioned the other night, I did give Mick Cronin a chance to get into some people a little bit, and that's a good thing in exhibition time, and talk about what he was frustrated with.
He was frustrated with Troy, obviously, because he was passive. Gary Clark, they always, you know, want more from Gary. You know, he's a guy that he has the talent to be a dominant player, but his mentality is one of do the dirty work and blend in, and they don't want him to blend in. They want him to stand out. So that's always been a difficult task. And then figuring out Kyle Washington, I think, is going to be...
That stat line the other night was not good.
Well, a perfect example. I was talking to somebody that was breaking down the tape the other day, and, you know, they were talking first transition play of the game. The first big is to run to the rim. Basic, standard stuff, right? First big down the floor, runs to the rim, ducks in, you know, gets in position. They do that every day, probably 20 times a day. Everything that they work on, that's what that responsibility is for the first big man to do. So first transition of the game, Kyle's the first big down the floor. Skinny, what do you think he does?
I'm going to guess he either flared to the corner or he jogged, one or the other.
Flared to the corner, looking for that three, baby.
Let me get one up.
Yeah, and they were not happy with that.
No, not if you've – that's the worst part. Not if you've drilled that. And that is
every day, 20 times a day.
That is basic fast break basketball. I mean, that's
you
it.
You
big guy, run to the rim.
Coach Skinny, you would have lost your mind.
I would have lost my mind. I'm trying to put in some secondary break stuff for my guys right now, and I'm losing my mind with that because half of them don't know where they're going half the time.
Would we have gotten a foot stomp if that would have happened?
Oh, no, you'd have gotten yankage. It would have been, you might as well just come back to me and sit next to me.
Go get him.
Get him now.
Well, on the flip side of that, Quadri Moore started the second half. Kyle Washington did not start the second half.
Did he run to the rim on the first transition opportunity?
I didn't get it.
All I would think that whole time is just run to the rim, run to the rim, run to the rim, run to the rim.
Yeah, Kyle.
Even if I'm the trailer, run to the rim.
Kyle's one of those kids that's really, really smart, and sometimes it's not the best of things because he thinks he knows what's best. And that can be a little frustrating as a coach. And
yeah, because coach makes the rules.
Yeah.
It's a pretty simple process.
He's still figuring that out.
You mentioned Quadri. A couple of UC fans I talked to him, that was their biggest takeaway from the exhibition against Bellarmine was he looks like a different guy. I mean, do you see that every day in practice?
He's definitely changed his mentality. He's a lot more open and engaged in what they're doing and trying to teach him and trying to get him bought in on. You know, he's – He's never going to be like a back to the basket banger type guy, but if he can settle into this role, is I think last year they needed him at the four, and I don't think as a four that's what he's good at. I think he's more of a five. Just because I don't think he can defend a four, I think he's much more suited to defend a five, and he's got a really nice jump shot. So if you've got a, you know, you got a backup five that you can put in and do some pick and pop stuff, and you know, run some of this open motion, you know, ball screen action that they want to run, he definitely gives them a different look, and he seems to be in a much better place mentally and physically. I mean, he's in great physical condition. I remember the first time he showed up three summers ago, and he had on one of those tight Under Armour like cutoffs.
It was not good. Yeah, it was not good.
We were the people we were sitting there with was like, he might need a C cup. Like
some extra poundage hanging off there.
He might need a C cup. He's got some moves.
Got a little Phil Mickelson working.
Got a little moves up there. Might get a black eye running up and down the floor. But he's gotten in much better physical condition, and he seems to be a lot more engaged and bought into to what they want him to do and how they want him to do it. So, I mean, it's crazy to say this, and it kind of gives you pause, but they're going to need Justin Jennifer and Quadri Moore to be pretty important factors on the team this year. And
scary proposition 6 months ago, but now it may be a different
story. Hopefully it'll pay off. I mean, you know, and Mick touched on that. He said, you know, the thing with those two guys is I don't have to worry about them not being coachable because they just want to play.
Yeah.
And they learned last year and 2 years in a row for Quadri, if you're not coachable and you don't do what you're told, you don't play. And now.
Yeah, because your other choice was to transfer and leave because you're not satisfied with what things going. They obviously stuck it out, stayed, and bought in enough to stick around.
Well, and if you're in those guys' situation, where are you going to go if you transfer?
Well, yeah, no,
where's
no,
Justin
no,
Jennifer going to go if he left here after last year?
Yeah, no, no.
Their options are to stay here and play at the highest level or go play for University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Correct.
And, you know, I don't think you want to do that, and if you don't have to, you can ask Deshaun Moorman, who's about to start his first year at Townsend, because he couldn't figure it out, and they told him to kick rocks.
Yeah, but you have to buy in, though, to want to stay around.
Absolutely.
So obviously, they both have done that. All right, we'll get back to a little best-case, worst-case scenario for UC in a second. I want to touch on Xavier with Rick here a little bit, and you can certainly chime in too, Chad.
Oh, I will.
You had three guys that combined for 58 points the other night, and it's the big three of Sumner, Blewett, and J.P. McCura. They don't have to score 60 of 80 points every night for this team to win, do they?
Well, I don't know. I would have said no coming. Well, here's the thing. They're going to get a nice boost.
I was trying to work on a percentage on that. It was 75%, by the way, and I couldn't do that off the top of my head.
I'm more of a sabermetrics guy anyway. Malcolm Bernard is going to give them a boost. He can get them 10 points a game, I think. After that, I'm interested to see where the rest of the offense comes from if you don't have Kaiser Gates, you don't have Miles Davis to start the season. That being said, those top three, you want them to score as many points as possible
good. No question, but as you know, that eventually there are nights where one of the three is not going to shoot it well or play well. It's just the way it works.
JP picks up two fouls in the first five minutes like he did in the exhibition, and then picks up a third and then picks up a fourth. So
yeah. The bigs didn't give them much. Can the bigs give them anything?
I'm higher on the bigs than most outsiders are that haven't been watching practice. That being said, that was terrible Saturday. I mean, Sean O'Mara he got the chance to start. He started against Georgia. He started this game.
Georgia, the super secret scrimmage, right?
Yeah, I mean, he may have started theoretically.
How did you know he started if it was super secret? Where did they play the super
secret? Tribeca University in Nashville.
So you know where they played. You know who started. Doesn't make it so super secret, Rick.
I got sources. Okay. I'm pretty well connected.
Okay, all right.
Been doing this a few years.
Just checking. All right, go ahead.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about the big stinking.
Yeah, that was a fact. Rashid Gaston, you know, just didn't give them much of anything on offense. And the other thing was they weren't great defensively. They didn't rebound nearly as well as they did in the Georgia scrimmage. The Georgia scrimmage, they didn't give up an offensive board until the final 5 minutes when they were running in some subs, which that's really impressive against a team like Georgia. Then you go and you play a Division II team, Ferris State.
They did you out give physical, out match, out everything.
And
yeah.
you give up 15 offensive rebounds. Now, granted, Ferris State missed 150 shots, so it gives them a lot of opportunities. But even from a percentage standpoint, it was still way too many.
Yeah. Is Gaston overmatched?
I don't think he's overmatched. I mean, because physically he's such a specimen. He's so strong. He's built like Jalen. He doesn't have the hops or the length that Jalen had, but he's built with that same – that body type. So he doesn't get physically overmatched. But, you know, the biggest question mark I had coming in was he's more of a below-the-rim guy. He's not a great back-to-the-basket scorer. Will he be able to give you much offensively? And now I don't think they're going to ask him to give them too much offensively. They want him to rebound and defend. But so far, you know, he hasn't done a whole lot on offense.
Now, I do want to touch on some good, too. Has Edmund Sumner taken another step, and how good can he eventually be?
Yeah, he's taken two steps. Yeah. It's so hard to remember back to the beginning of last year, but everyone was worried about what Xavier was going to do at point guard last year.
No question, yeah.
I mean, he went from being a guy that was a total unknown, and then he gets a concussion early on in the year when they're on the road.
It was a Temple – no, Nova game, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it was Nova game.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he went through some things last year where it's like it's hard to remember that really – last year wasn't like an unbelievable year for him. He averaged like, what, 10 points a game and was just,
he
was.
But it gave him a different gear, though.
Yeah,
he was in. Yeah.
Sure, he was really impressive for a freshman, but it's like this year when you think about what he can do, right. I mean, he could legitimately be one of the best point guards in college basketball and could be a star that leads your team. And to think about where he was a year ago, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's done a good job with his body. He's never going to be a big, strong guy, but he's gotten to the point where he's not, you know, so frail and so skinny. And defensively, Gary Payton pulled him aside when he was at the Nike Skills Camp this summer and said, you've got to be a better defender. Like, you have all the tools. You have to take that part of your game seriously. And it seems like he's taken that to heart because last year he was probably their worst defender despite his physical attributes. And that, I mean, that just can't be the case when you're 6'6", long and explosive athletically. This year he's been much better so far.
It's still hard to believe that's the kid that we saw when he was going into his senior year in high school, Rick. I mean
he's 6'1", 6'2", and 130 pounds.
I was going to say, what he weighed in high school.
I don't think he was.
I'm not sure he's 130 pounds now, no. Is he?
I think he's up to 180 now, but seriously, skinny. He was.
We both loved him. I get a lot of heat for not saying anything nice about Xavier.
I was going to ask you that here in a second, but go ahead. Say something nice right now.
We both loved Edmund Sumner, but it was such a projection. It was such a. Man.
You got to give Travis Steele a lot of credit on that one. Because I remember being told to go watch him when he was going into his sophomore year at a tournament. And I come back like, I mean, sure, he was good. He could shoot the ball. He could handle it. He's quick. He's pretty athletic. But it's like, man, he looks like a middle. How do I project a fifth grader playing against Division I college basketball players in the Big East?
Because the physical maturity has to take place. At some point.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, you have no chance.
And then a few years later, all of a sudden he's 6'2", and I love him. I think, oh, great, he's fine now. Now that he's 6'2", he can play point guard. And then 2 years later, he's 6'6". So it's like, my goodness, what? I mean, they got lucky on the 6'6 thing to a certain extent.
Right.
But knowing that his game translated so well despite him being so slight a stature at that point was just phenomenal foresight by the
It was amazing to watch that kid. It was like a baby deer. I mean, it was knees and elbows, it was. You could see that it was coming, but you didn't know what it would manifest at.
Right, and that's the great part of recruiting. Sometimes is you take that chance with some knowledge of what it could become, and then it comes to fruition, and you look like a genius at the end of the day.
Yeah,
a kid that really, I mean, he jumped up into some 4-star.
Yeah,
he made
like 98 or 96 in the top 100 by the very end, but that was like after he was committed.
But that, for the most part, nobody even had him anywhere near 3- or 4-star status.
The best part was I was sitting watching that. So it's the family from Detroit, famous AAU program, obviously, that he played for. It wasn't a very good team at the time. They were 16U, and there were two 16U teams, and he played on the one that wasn't as good.
The second,
right. So it's some offsite gym. I go to watch him, and I'm sitting there. Travis Steele's sitting there, and John Beilein walks in from Michigan to watch him. And he had been sent there to see Edmund Sumner, right? Well, the names and numbers, which this is a classic AAU before the EYBL took over.
Don't match. Never do. Yeah.
Not right.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, Steele had known who he was, so I know who he was and everything. Beilein comes in, sitting next to me, and at some point, he's kind of looking through the numbers. I can tell it's not adding up in his head. And he goes, do you know, is this...
You should have told him a different guy.
Who is this? Well... I looked at him. I said, I'm trying to figure out the same thing because I could feel the glare of Travis Steele staring down upon me. Like, if you tell him who that is, I will murder you.
Make him figure it out on his own.
By halftime, Beilein got up and left the gym, didn't watch the rest of the game, never knew who Edmund Sumner was that day. Probably walked away with a terrible opinion of whoever
number five was.
Exactly.
Number five just he does nothing for me.
Exactly.
Right now, number five didn't even get a college scholarship anywhere, whoever that guy was.
That's what he gets for taking away Trey Burke when Cincinnati had him locked up.
See? It's
jerk off.
See, there it is. That's all it takes. It took him just a little bit of a thing to get him going. No question. I do want to touch real quick on Miles Davis, and obviously it's still very much in question, and how much Do they miss him, and what difference does he make for this team if he eventually plays?
I think Saturday you saw exactly where they miss him, and it's not that
the fourth score.
It's not where that to a certain extent, but it's not as much that of they miss the offensive firepower, because I think they can still score 100 with this team pretty easily. It's when things aren't going right in the first half and it's choppy and it's impatient. It's like, yeah, you're still up. You're still going right. to be winning by 12 at halftime against a team that's inferior. But it's like, why is everything not running smoothly? Why can't we get into our offense? You don't have that fifth-year guy to grab everybody in a huddle, yell at them for a second, say, hey, relax. Let's do our thing. Hey, let's get back to what we do.
Right.
Settle down. Take a step. Slow it down a little bit. We're going too fast right now. Move the ball. Do our offense. When you don't have that, I think it makes a difference, and Miles is that guy. He was that guy last year. He's a great passer and such a good shooter, helps space the floor even more than they already are. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big miss. Now, the thing is, I don't think it's as much up in the air anymore. We've been getting more and more hints. I reported a couple weeks ago from based on sources that I think he's going to be back by the end of the first semester almost certainly now at this point.
And that gets you back for conference play, or even towards the tail end of non-conference too.
Yeah, we'll see exactly where it lies because, you know, if it's the end of the first semester, like the day classes end on the first semester, then it's like Wake Forest non-conference. If it's not, then it's like the Villanova game in conference. It's a huge, totally different story. It's five games later, and it's a lot harder to fit him back in when you're
You've already got a rotation. Yeah. Right. Yeah, no doubt.
It'll be
but it'll still be a welcome addition no matter what.
Oh, they want him back no matter what. It's the easiest piece to fit onto a team when you have a sharpshooter like that. Yep. So.
All right, before I ask you best case, worst case scenario for each of the teams you guys cover, your opinion, Chad, of Xavier's team going into this year?
I mean, they're incredibly explosive, their first three guys, and that's it goes without saying.
They're going to be politically correct here.
He's not.
Say whatever I feel. I mean, I've always been a big Trayvon Blewett guy. He played on a loaded AAU team, and if you looked at the box score, 90% of the time he was the leading scorer, you know, on a team with five. You know, Trey Lyles played on that team.
Right.
And Trayvon Blewett was usually the guy that put up the most production. So, J.P. McCura, he's a lunatic, but he's still a guy that can...
As long as he keeps his pants up, everything's good.
Little locker room talk.
Those three guys give them such a formidable trio that are really tough to defend.
Skinner, we always talk about how irrationally confident JP is. That's like why he's so much fun because he just he is 100% certain he's just great at everything, which is why he's so good at basketball. But his new thing was the other day he was arguing with assistant Luke Murray. They were arguing about if you could hit Aroldis Chapman, like if they could personally hit him.
And he thought he could.
And Luke Murray was saying out of 100 pitches, I would never be able to hit him. Like I'd maybe foul two off out of luck at best. And JP was so turned off by the fact that Luke didn't think he could get a hit. So then when I did the podcast the next day with him, JP told me he would get three hits out of 100 pitches off Aroldis Chapman.
Three like fouls?
Into the outfield hits, he said. And if you gave him 1,000 pitches with a metal bat, he'd hit one out.
All right, did he play high school baseball?
No. Hasn't played since eighth grade. I asked him. They throw 96 in eighth grade.
That's a big question.
In Minnesota, and he said about 47 or so. So he's well prepared for this act, but he's convinced. So that's all that you need to know about JP.
So he's nuts. He's a lunatic.
He's a wild dude.
I do have a lot of concerns about X inside because I think they got so much from the two guys last year, and it's really difficult to replace the leadership that James Farr eventually developed into. I wouldn't say Jalen was a leader because he was also kind of a lunatic, but he was
his toughness.
Yeah, but he was an emotional guy, and they used that to spark them some. I just don't know. Now, I get that they're trying to minimize it and just saying, hey, we're going to score. And I think it probably hasn't been talked about much, but I think not having Kaiser Gates at 100% right away is a big detriment to this team because that gave them the ability to really stretch the floor, have a fourth guy out there that can really help you out. And I was last year, you know, I knew offensively what he could do. We had seen him quite a bit. Defensively, he really surprised me.
That was the big thing with him. Yeah, he's just so laterally quick for a 6'8 forward that he can guard twos and threes, and if he gets switched onto a point guard, he was fine. I mean, he switched onto Billy Garrett several times at the DePaul game last year and kept him right in front of him with no trouble. So that's a huge thing for getting him back. But also, like, a lot of people keep saying that on the Xavier side of things is like, oh, well, they need Kaiser back. If he was there, they'd be fine. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, I think he will be good. I think he'll do the things that you mentioned, but he still has a ton to prove, too. Like, he played such a minimal role last year that he's a big question. question mark. And him not being able to practice before the preseason,
yeah, that's huge.
To me, that would be a concern because you have no idea where he's at really right now.
No,
I mean,
I agree.
The staff has a better feel, but like it's still not in the mix. Malcolm Bernard has been huge. We haven't talked about him really, but he does so much because he's a good defender. He's long. I don't know if he's quite the stopper Remy Abel was, where you can just say, go chase Kellen Dunham off 150 screens and he'll be there on every catch. But he understands the system. He's picked it up quick, and he's just a good overall defender, good team defender, and he really handles it and passes it well. So
here, we'll put him on the spot for one, just because you like when I do this.
Yes.
Wasn't he one? I know you're a big sabermetrics guy.
Yeah.
Sabermetrics guy. Stats are sabermetrics. Yeah. Wasn't he one of the least efficient players in the country last year?
Yeah, he was. And he shot a terrible percentage from three. My biggest surprise was how well he shot the ball since he's got here. He's worked with Redford on his shot. It's improved. But that's not going to be his role. It's not going to be spot-up shooter. But the thing about FAMU that you've got to understand is, one, they had no type of offensive system. It was give Malcolm the ball and get out of his way, and he goes 1-on-4. And two, he was going 1-on-4 a lot, so he's taking turnaround fadeaways from 17 feet.
Yeah, they're just terrible shots.
And what the thing, so the question was when he got here, is it's like, okay, is that who he is? Or
was that what he had to do?
Will he be able to play within the team? And it turns out he's super unselfish. The best part of his game is his passing ability. He loves making plays for his teammates. So in that regard, he's fit in really well. He doesn't feel like he has to get his, and that's the big key for him.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. That was a huge question mark coming
legit.
In.
It was legit. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, Rick, you on your take on UC.
I think they're better than they were last year, without question. But it's still like there's still a lot of question marks. Is Jacob Evans as good as everyone at UC thinks he is? I think he is really good, but that needs to be proven still, and he needs to be healthy to prove that, and he's not. So that's a huge deal. If he's not the go-to scorer they think he is, all of a sudden this team becomes sort of like the teams we've seen in the last few years where they're not able to score as easily as everyone thinks they're going to be able to this year.
Yeah, where do the points come from if that's the case?
Right. I mean, it's the difference this year is having four guys on the floor pretty much at all times that can score.
Yeah.
And if you take Jacob out of that,
all of a sudden you have three guys and they're pretty similar.
And one of them's Kyle that you're not sure.
Yeah, then it's a real trickle down. I mean, that fourth guy who could be your main guy then sets everybody else up too.
Well, then you're asking Troy and Gary to be alphas. And I don't know how much exactly. You know, Troy, we've seen it at end-of-game situations, but we've never seen him take over and be a full game, you know, other than, you know, that UConn game in the tournament.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yep.
But that's really the only time we've seen him, you know, be a big-time alpha male type player for 40 minutes. So without Jacob,
And Skinny, you may totally disagree with me on this, but I don't like – I feel like if you limit possessions in a game – It keeps every team in the game with you. And that's what UC did last year. That's how you lose a bunch of games by one possession or buzzer beaters, or you keep saying you're unlucky like last year, is you keep everyone in the game with you and play a low possession game.
I always say it depends on what your personnel. If your personnel, that's what it dictates.
And to an extent, I'm sure that's why Mick's done it. But that's the question, right? If this team can score and Jacob Evans is good and they're more explosive offensively, does he start letting them go a little bit and let them push the pace on some of these teams? Because in the American, you can't let all these teams stay in the game with you. You've got to beat some of them by 25. Like, that's what they need to do this year, I think. So you can't hit some of those losses that they hit last year. And if they avoid that, then you get a reasonable seed and you have a chance to do some damage in the tournament, because I think this team is talented enough to make a run in the tournament. But you got to set yourself up for that.
All right. That segues into then the last couple of things we're going to talk about. Start with you, Chad. Best case scenario for UC, how far can they go? And worst case scenario of if a couple of injuries occur, if a couple of things don't go right, where could that season turn?
I mean, best case scenario, I think this is a second weekend team, Sweet 16.
Yep.
Depending on matchups, you know, maybe they could sneak into an Elite Eight if the offense develops like we think it can because of having more guys that can score. You know they're going to defend, so that sets up for a team that can make a run. I don't think it's a Final Four team, just because the depth I'm not, you know, completely sold on yet.
And you got to have a couple NBA guys.
I think Jacob can be.
Yeah,
but like Rick said, he's got to prove it.
Right.
You know, so a second weekend type team, best case scenario, team that competes with UConn pretty much tooth and nail for that American Conference Championship. Would be nice to see them not have to play UConn in the first round in Hartford in the AAC tournament, which seems to be a staple of how things go. That would be nice not to have to deal with. But worst case, man. Jacob Evans, this foot thing lingers, and from what I've heard, he's working his way back into game shape. But if this foot, you know, it's a bone bruise in his foot, if this thing says the type of thing that lingers, you're looking at a team that could you know, here's the tough part. They go the third game of the season is against Rhode Island.
Yeah, that,
Rhode Island is really, really good.
Yeah, there's a portion of that non-conference schedule that's very soft, but those couple of possible back-to-backers, Rhodey and then Duke, if it comes down to Duke, I mean, Rhodey especially, that's a tough third game.
But if you get the Duke game, it's great.
Yeah, that's gravy to some degree, too.
But I think the problem is everybody just expects
it to happen, and that's a huge expectation.
Correct. Especially if you can't play against Rhode Island.
We're both big EC Matthews guys. That's the best player at Rhode Island. Jared Terrell is a guy that I watched a lot and really liked. Hassan Martin is really good. The big
Karan Iverson.
Allen Iverson's cousin that was at Memphis. He's a lunatic, but
talented.
Jarvis Garrett is their point guard, who's very steady. It's Stanford Robinson that was at Indiana. They've got a really, really good team, and Danny Hurley is a heck of a coach. So, and it's 45 minutes from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
If they, you know, and that Rhode Island team, they've smacked Harvard pretty good in a super secret scrimmage, and they were up by 24 on St. John's when they pulled their starters. We know a lot about these super secret scrimmages.
You know, they're apparently not as secret as everybody seems. Who is it? Jeff Goodman had the whole list of the super secret scrimmages, correct?
Yeah. When you know as many people as we know.
Yeah, that's right. You guys know all the super secret scrimmages.
Yeah. You get some super
secret scrimmages.
Who did Northwestern scrimmage in the super secret scrimmage?
Northwestern has a basketball team?
Okay, there you go. Maybe they didn't have a super secret scrimmage then.
But, I mean, this could be a team that is back to scratching and clawing in February to make the tournament. And I mean, if it goes really bad, they could end up in the NIT. I don't necessarily see that with this group.
There'd have to be some real injuries that would have come in, more than just Jacob Evans.
I think it's a tournament team anyway it goes. But, you know, if the Jacob thing lingers and they struggle to get Kyle, you know, where they need him to be, then it's a team that, you know, is going to be back fighting for that 10, 11, 12, you know. And
which gives you no real fighting chance come tournament. Yeah.
You're facing a one or a two in the second round, and you're not making, you know, unless you get like Xavier, where Lehigh and Georgia State
help you out, do some
favors.
There was. You were waiting for it. You were waiting for it. I mean, it was coming. I don't care.
It's a fact. I mean, they
weren't seated where they needed to be, and they caught a break, and they end up in the Sweet 16. You have to get lucky in that.
Sometimes you do.
You put it in front of you, and if teams have NBA players, sometimes they can beat Duke. So that's what happens.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, well, and it's not really even a shot. It opened up for them, and they made it into that second weekend, and UC hasn't had any openings like that.
No, they've not. I mean,
you know, it is what it is. But they do it to themselves the past couple years because they haven't played well enough to get a 5 seed or a 4 seed or whatever the case may be.
To give you that fighting chance.
Yeah. So,
all right, for Xavier, best case, worst case?
Yeah, the best case scenario is this team is really talented, and it can make the type of run that Xavier's never made before. I mean, they could be an Elite Eight or a Final Four team. Yeah. That's quite possible. There are major concerns, and I do not think they go 12-0 in non-conference like they did last year. I think there are some bumps along the way.
And that's a tough non-conference schedule, too.
And I think they could start off slow. Yeah, they did not take it easy. After they got screwed out of the Gavitt games, they were supposed to host Wisconsin, host a Big Ten team. All of a sudden, they had a scramble. They end up coming up with, like, kind of three tougher games than they were expecting to play, I think. The Utah game is kind of a throw-in game. You know, you already had Northern Iowa in there, which is going to be a tough game at CentOS. And at Colorado and at Baylor are both going to be tough games on the road. So, yeah, I think this is not going to be an easy opening for the season.
Can you tell the scheduling story? There was a lot that happened.
Here's the thing. I talked to Mario Mercurio about this. We had him on the podcast, and he said they've tried things they've never tried before.
And he does a lot of the scheduling and the Nike deal.
He's the director of basketball administration at X. He's great. One of the best in the country at what he does. And so Xavier offered to let some local big time programs buy them, which is something they haven't done in decades. Yeah, NKU.
Thomas Moore?
And the local team turned them down, worried about roster composition and helping out a local program that's on the verge of elite status. So,
Wow.
Got turned down to be bought. I mean, go to
damn you, Ohio State.
Indiana? Oh, it's not them? Indiana? Louisville.
Hang on. We're in the tri-state area. Hey, let's see. We've pinpointed it. Let's go about 80 miles south on I-75. Is that possible?
Eastern Kentucky?
No comment.
That's right. Yeah, I went a little too far. I think you're right. 65 miles south. That's right. I went a little too far with my driving there. My bad.
No comment.
All right. But worst case scenario then.
Worst case scenario is, look, the bigs aren't good enough, and they're not going to be good enough. And those three guys are good, but maybe one of them gets injured, or maybe just three of them with getting in foul trouble and stuff like that. They're too slow and they fall behind.
Could you play small?
Yeah, I mean, that's, they're going to play small. They're starting with Trayvon at the four, and they can go even, you know, I don't think they can really go smaller than that, but when you get Kaiser back, you theoretically could maybe even put him at the five, though him being set back before the season, they haven't really had a chance to work on that.
Right.
Death lineup.
Yeah, they were thinking about doing that before the season, but they were also thinking Tyreek Jones, the freshman, might be ineligible, and he's eligible. He's probably not going to redshirt, so now you have three centers. You don't necessarily need to play Kaiser at the five.
You just need one of them to step forward and play well.
Yeah, you just need one of them to be decent.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the thing. Is I think the worst-case scenario for Xavier isn't that they're a bad team that can't make the tournament or compete in the tournament. It's that they lose four games in the non-conference and set themselves up to be a five or six seed instead of a two through four seed. And then, you know, you're not where you wanted to be, obviously.
And then I want to touch on the leagues, each of the leagues. In the American this year, how deep is it? And what does that set up for UC when they get league-wise?
It's UC and Connecticut pretty clearly at the top this year. Some people still think SMU is going to be pretty good. We'll see. I mean, they lost their two guys that really for the last 3 years, Marcus Kennedy and Nick Moore, that really fueled everything they did. I'm a big Shake Milton guy. I think he's going to step into that, you know, star role for them, but we'll see on that. I think Memphis is going to be a lot better than people are thinking that they're going to be. Tubby, as we know, is a very, very good coach. He has the best player in the league. I mean, I almost, you know, no offense to Troy Copain, but I kind of chuckled a little bit when he was named co-player of the year because Dedrick Lawson is a stud. And then Keelon Lawson, his younger brother, is now going to be back from injury that he had last year. So I think Memphis is going to be pretty good. Houston with Kelvin Sampson finally. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Kelvin Sampson finally getting things rolling there. I think they're going to be a little bit better. The problem that you're going to have is the bottom of the league, South Florida, Central Florida with Johnny Dawkins might be.
It does come down to this. You can't afford a ton of slip-ups in the league just because you're not going to help yourself.
Not to the bottom of the league. Yeah, right. Absolutely not, because I think it's going to be a little better where they're not. You know, the problem's been in years past, they've had two or three teams that are 300-plus in RPI.
Right.
So you've got five, basically, bye games added to your schedule because of your conference, and it just tanks all of your metrics, all your numbers.
But you're right, because then it puts maximum importance on, you know, Temple in the past, UConn in the past, SMU in the past.
Temple, I think,
Memphis
will still be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think those teams hopefully will be up more in the 250s, up closer to 200 than they were 335 like they have been in the past. So the league is still top-heavy. But the bottom is getting a little bit better, hopefully.
All right. For the Big East last year, very deep. You didn't have a lot of nights off. Maybe DePaul could be considered a night off. How deep is it this year?
It's deeper. It's better than it was last year. But the thing is, after the top three teams, which you go Villanova, Xavier, and Creighton, I think Creighton's going to be pretty darn good. We'll see. This is a big year for McDermott because since his son was there, he hasn't really had a team that was capable of competing in the top half of the league. And I think he's done a pretty good job with those teams. But at the same time, he needs to prove he can get it done without just having his son being a scorer.
Awesome backcourt.
But their backcourt this year is really talented with Watson and Foster. So I think they're going to be really good there and clear the third team. Then after that, four through like nine or eight is it literally could be anybody. I think Providence is pretty bad. I think DePaul's probably not going to be very good.
That's your squad.
That's my guys, but I don't.
Why are they your guys?
I don't even really know. It's been a long, weird thing on my website where I guess every year I predicted them to be better than they were, and then they finished dead last, and everyone crushed me.
Sounds like my guy Paul Daner with his Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah,
he just
jagging
loves.
Off.
Yeah,
with
I know. With Dave Leto.
Yeah, Dave Leto. And Rick Carter
they give him
left
a,
and
do
went
Do you think
there
they'll
too,
give him a third so. Chance to be a head coach there?
Yeah, well, why not?
So he'll leave, he'll be an assistant again, then they'll bring him back and try it one more time.
They'll make the
third time's a charm.
They'll make the tournament the next 2 years, have great success, be totally shocked by it. Then when they don't make the tournament that third year, they'll fire him because they're supposed to be doing better with their new arena, and then they'll bring in someone that'll be terrible, and they'll bring him back again.
Oliver Purnell will come back, too.
If they bring back Oliver Purnell, that'd be awesome. His suit game was so proper. His quotes were strong. I liked Oliver Purnell.
Yeah, just didn't get it done there.
No, not quite.
Rick's all about the suit game.
For Rick, it is, apparently.
I'm a big suit guy.
Are you? You wear them so often.
Yeah, my thread count's pretty high.
Yeah, how many suits you got in your closet, Rick?
Yeah, I'd say probably one.
One full suit, or is this like suit separates?
One full suit and then a couple separates.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you? You ain't a suit guy.
One full. I'm not a suit guy.
Oh, yeah. Look. Look who's talking. How many suits you got there, big fella?
Believe it or not.
Here's another question.
No, you're on TV constantly.
Believe it or not,
suits.
You know how many suits I have?
Probably seven.
Try zero. Not one single suit. I have about seven or eight different jackets, and you just mix them with slacks, and it looks like a suit.
There you go.
Here's a better question. How many pullovers do you have?
I have literally 18 pullovers, and I'm going to get two more for basketball season. So
20 is your
20
number?
20 would be the number.
Nice.
And a lot of them are free. You know how that goes. You get your free swag. You
gotta love
free,
the free closet.
Free pullover swag.
No,
I mean, his pullover game is strong.
I'm not so sure I don't have anything in my closet that isn't logoed somehow, some way.
So we're doing the coaches versus cancer thing. And we're on the
media. I wore a pullover that night.
We're on the
not?
Media panel, yeah. And I'm concerned, like, because it's suits and sneakers.
Yeah,
that we're gonna have to, you know, go full suit, and I'm not really like wanting to. So I'm like, Skin, you going suits and sneakers to this thing? He's like, I'm going pullover and slacks. And I'm like,
nice.
Of course you're going pullover and slacks. I've never seen you in anything but pullover.
He's steady. He's consistent.
Right.
He's reliable. You don't. What the hell do you need to dress?
It's comfortable.
For? Yeah,
it's comfortable.
Absolutely.
I mean, like today, I got a pullover with shorts on. It's kind of the mix and match. It was when I walked in today. It was 50 degrees. When I walk outside, you can always take the pullover off.
You look great, and honestly, I'm just glad you
covers,
two.
It covers the fat. I mean, it's a good thing.
I'm a big pullover guy because of the fat thing. The quarter zip is my go-to. Well,
it makes you look more svelte, no matter whether you're svelte or not.
Quarter zip. It's just easy. Like,
it's very
easy. Yeah, it's very easy.
I will not apologize for my wardrobe ever.
You don't got to tuck it in. But I am glad, you know, you two being big time and being on the Coaches vs. Cancer board there. I'm glad you guys were able to record with me.
We're big time.
Me.
Yeah, we're big time.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm glad you guys were willing to do a podcast with me despite me being.
They went Lindsey Patterson over you.
Not a bad choice.
You know what? We want Lindsey Patterson over you.
That's not the worst choice.
No, it's not. It's not.
It was us two, Lindsey, and then a guy from Dayton.
We'll see,
so she took the Xavier spot, kind of.
I'll tell you what, we'll
that
try.
Makes sense.
We'll see if we can get you in next year.
No, yeah. I'm good. We'll just keep doing the podcast. I'm good.
Okay. All right, fellas. All right, lastly, I have to do it because everybody hokey.
Jesus.
I know these guys, I've already warned them. They're already upset about it. I know this is a real tough task for you guys to do. Final four picks from both of you.
All right. I mean, I
think we're all going Duke, Kentucky, and then we're going to mix and match from there.
Well, you just took my two. That's not fair.
I'm going to go with a surprise. I'm not real confident in this one, fellas, because he kind of weirds me out. But I'm going to go with Indiana and Creepy Crean. I really, really like OG Anunoby. Excellent, you know, defender. I think his offensive game is going to come along quite a bit this year, which is going to be big for them. I don't know what they're, you know, losing Yogi. I'm not sure what their point guard game is going to be like. They need to get that figured out. But I know Rick's a big James Blackman guy with the little –
yeah, and they missed him. And they missed
great
him last
lettuce.
Year.
Yeah,
they missed him.
I love the storyline of he goes out and it made them better. That's what everyone's storyline.
Yeah.
No, they're so much better. They share the ball and they're good on defense. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna give a shout out to my guy Tony Stubblefield, who's on the staff at Oregon, former Bearcat assistant. I'm gonna go with the Ducks and Dylan Brooks.
They were close last year. They just kind of quietly worked their way to where you looked up and you went, wait, they got a shot to be a one seed.
Got a really good roster again this year. In the Pac-12, I think, you know, it's not going to be as tough. So I think they can get back in that one seed, two seed range. And
they've gone from being a football school now to a basketball school.
It's crazy. So. But maybe they can build on that experience that they gained last year and use it to get into a Final Four this year.
Yeah, so obviously Duke and Kentucky, we've all got in. After that, I think Villanova gets back. I do. Chris Jenkins is really good. The team's so experienced. I think Jalen Brunson is going to take over perfectly at point guard and be a stud for them. I think he was ready to do it last year and just kind of had to pump the brakes because Arch was there. But, yeah, that team's loaded. It's Mikal Bridges I love, too. He was coming off the bench last year. He's going to be a huge part of what they do.
It's a shame they didn't get Amari Spellman eligible.
Yeah, I mean, because that would have been another really nice piece and made them more dominant side. That is the big question mark. It's like Daryl Reynolds is not Daniel Ochefu.
And there's a part, too, and I know all these guys haven't been a part of some of Villanova's stumbles over the years, but there's a part when you finally do get over the hump that you just have a
belief.
You go on a run of some kind.
That team feels like they have it, too.
Right.
Like they're a really confident group, and I think
Jay... they can just do so much. That's the
Josh
thing.
Hart's
they just do
fantastic.
So much.
Yeah, Josh Hart's such a winner. He's always been that way. Never been a guy who like had to stand out, but he made so many winning plays. I just love him. And then Wisconsin would be the other team that I'd put in there. I feel like, and it's not necessarily that they're
gritty.
So, yeah, they're not so talented or anything this year, but it's just, they're experienced.
Heart.
They've been there.
Coach's sons.
Deceptively athletic. I mean, come on, guys. They got it
Shooters.
All.
Shooters, yeah. I mean,
yeah, a bunch of wearing a bunch of hard hats to work every day.
I mean, lunch pail,
gritty, and
business trip type guys.
Grinders, yeah. They've got a lot of business trips this year, and I think they'll get it done.
I'm going to go with your three. I'm going to take a different Big Ten team, though. I'm going to take a different Big Ten team. Sparty gets back. Sparty gets after last year's absolute disappointment, where they couldn't guard off the bounce against Middle Tennessee of all people. I think that they're not going to go deep this year.
Bridges is a kid. He's going to be on SportsCenter every night.
All the time.
I mean, yeah. He is he's 6, legit 6'7", 6'8", 230 pounds, and I can absolutely jump out of the gym. He caught a body the other day in their.
What, he had like 30 in their first exhibition?
He is ridiculous. A beast. This is an awesome freshman class. We're going to have to get into that at some point in time.
We will. Yeah. We've got a lot of season to talk
about.
Maybe
when we do the UK show, we'll talk about that freshman class.
Do they have any?
They caught like one or two.
Bam.
Decent.
Bam. How great is that to be the UK PA announcer and that gets dropped on your lap and all you have
every
to
dunk,
say
every
just,
dunk.
Bam. 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 You don't have to say anything else.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
He's already doing it. I heard him in the first exhibition.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see either one
of
them.
Bam.
All right, I like it. I like that. Although I still like my guy Herb Bauer. Still my guy.
Herb Bauer is the best.
He is the best. By
three-point field goal.
For Xavier. It's awesome stuff. He's the best. He's been doing this for a long, long time. Fellas, I appreciate the time, and we'll be back on Friday with another podcast. We'll look ahead to the openers, and we've got a lot of college basketball season ahead of us to continue to talk and at some point probably have a fist fight of some kind, right?
Sounds good to me.
I'm down.
We'll get Chad some throat lozenges.
Yeah, well, there's that. Between now and then, can you do something about that?
I will try to get the sinus issues that I'm having corralled by Friday.
It's right, probably not the six packs of cigarettes a day.
No.
It's got to be the sinus.
It's only five.
Or allergies.
Yeah, allergies.
It's only five.
That's what my dad used to say. allergies. Okay. You're on your fourth pack of Camels today, Dad. Okay, you go with the allergy thing, my man. All right. Fellas, thanks for being with us. This has been the Skinny Podcast with Chad Brendel and Rick Roaring on Local12.com.